I recently read that the Flathead Valley is set to get its very first escalator. It'll be part of the renovations at the airport. In an article in the Daily Interlake back in July, the airport director called the expansion project the biggest project in the history of the airport. I assume he was not talking about the global understanding of the airport, but our little outpost here in the Flathead Valley. Building projects are almost always exciting, especially if the only responsibility in the endeavor is to watch the dirt being moved and the pieces of new building being put together. But if you've been intimately connected to any kind of construction, a home of your own, a commercial project, maybe even a church, you may have been like my dad. My parents were having a house built, and after the workers cleared out for the day, my dad would go out with a tape measure just to make sure that the rooms were the correct dimensions because they looked too small. And in projects that I've been a part of, it's true, the size of things looks strangely small before the full floor and the walls go up. Things can quickly turn the other direction, though, too. Seeing skyscrapers go up in a big city, it's hard to imagine how something so enormous can keep from falling over when it reaches 80, 90, or 100 stories tall. When I lived in the Bay Area of California as a kid, we would go up to San Francisco and ride the cable cars and shop the little stores at Fisherman's Wharf, and in parts of the city where the towers rose above the street, I remember looking up and marveling at the stone and steel and glass that was held together even in the wind and the rain. And although I never experienced this myself, sometimes they said even an earthquake. Such is the case for the disciples walking the streets of Jerusalem with Jesus as they passed the walls of the temple. "Look, what large stones and what large buildings." And the temple was an impressive structure. The western wall, of which you can still visit, was almost 1,600 feet long and rose above the ground almost 100 feet, or 10 total stories. According to the Gospel of Mark, Jesus traveled to Jerusalem only one time. And so it's quite possible that these disciples are like I was when I was a kid in the streets of San Francisco, seeing these wonders for the very first time. But Jesus isn't near as enamored by the spectacle. In fact, he's kind of a buzzkill. "Not one stone will be left upon another. All will be thrown down." The other part of this story that's probably significant is that in the year AD 70, the stones of the temple were brought down by the powers of the Roman military as they destroyed most of Jerusalem following a rebellion by Jewish factions. The Gospel of Mark was likely written shortly after that event, most likely as a response to the horror of seeing that catastrophe, even among Christians. Now, as I've said before, far be it from me to suggest that Jesus didn't really actually say these words. Certainly, he could have been speaking prophecy about the eventuality of those who follow the God represented by the temple that would be set to siege by the powers of the world. Or maybe Jesus said things like this at other times. Or maybe Mark puts these words in Jesus' mouth as a result of the horrible, awful things that have happened to his own people some 40 years or more after Jesus walked in and out of the temple. Either way, this little passage says much about where we put our trust. These buildings look pretty strong, Jesus. And Jesus replies, let me tell you about strength. Let me tell you about putting your trust in buildings and systems and powers and rulers. Anything here today can be gone tomorrow. Perhaps the first to read these words had literally seen the temple walls fall. Perhaps, too, we can relate to this scenario because we've seen walls and buildings fall, homes and neighborhoods burn, systems of government and power crumble. Sometimes I think we can over-spiritualize the Bible. Like the Bible and its stories are somehow all about a world that exists above us or outside of us. Words like sin and grace, redemption and salvation tend to take on a metaphysical nature. And we turn ideas of security and hope into something that happens in our hearts or after we die. But the Bible and its stories are actually much more down to earth, more real life than we often assume. The reading from Daniel today comes from a time in Jewish history just before what's called the Maccabean Revolt. The Maccabean Revolt is the event that makes up the story of Hanukkah that Jews still celebrate in our communities today. But prior to that revolt, prior to those events, when Jews took control of the temple back from their Greek occupiers at the time, the rule of Antiochus IV had been defined by severe Jewish persecution and oppression. The first verse of our reading today, the prophet declares, "There shall be a time of anguish such as has never occurred since the nations came into existence." Such a time of anguish. In fact, one of the reasons that some of the Jewish leaders during Jesus' time tend to cast aspersions on the notion of making their Roman occupiers mad was because they had heard about the situation under Antiochus IV just a couple of hundred years before. And compared to those days, the situation with Rome seemed like easy living. But these are real life situations that our ancestors lived through. Real like more recent stories of the horrors of slavery or the Holocaust or Japanese internment camps. Stories like child trafficking and human smuggling. Stories like racial discrimination in housing and resource distribution, or COVID vaccine being unavailable in poor communities, even in the richest country in the world. When African slaves had lived in the so-called New World for 3 or 4 or 5 or more generations, long enough to lose any semblance or connection to the culture of their homeland, some of them began to adopt the themes and the ideas of their Christian oppressors. They learned to read by reading the Bible. And their masters allowed this because it seemed good that they would want to read and hear the words of salvation. But the slaves heard a very different story in those pages. The slaves heard a story of salvation that doesn't just take you to heaven when you die because you've been a good enough person here on earth. They read a story of a people oppressed, persecuted, enslaved by the sin of a world that wields power and domination strong enough to hold people in chains and bring down buildings. They read stories like the one we've heard from Daniel today, but also from Isaiah and Jeremiah, the Psalms of Lament, the grief of Job, the Exodus and Revelation, and Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They heard Jesus speak about oppression and persecution, of wars and famines and earthquakes, and they knew that Jesus was speaking to them. And they knew that the hope that Jesus spoke through these words meant that the way things are today will not be the way things will be forever. And salvation, freedom, joy, and peace were carried on those words. And so they'd sing, "Wade in the water, children. God's gonna trouble the water. And swing low, swing chariot. Coming for to carry me home. Sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down, but still my soul feels heavenly bound." Those spirituals, like the hymns of the church in every time and place, speak of salvation that surely will come in the end of days. But by singing the words today, the pain of oppression, the fear of destruction, the loneliness of persecution and discrimination are relieved, lifted, and we are set free. "When will these things come to pass?" the disciples asked Jesus. Oh, they like to ask questions that even Jesus cannot answer. "Beware that no one leads you astray," Jesus replies. "Be not alarmed when war comes and nations rage, when there are earthquakes and famines. Just keep on singing. Keep on reading the story of salvation, and you will live to see the end, the true end, the blessed end. For the glory of this story, both for those who once upon a time saw the mighty stones of the temple fall, and for us who have seen our own powers fall around us. The glory of this story is this: the stones upon stones is not the end. The fall of the walls of Jerusalem is not the end. These are just the birth pangs, the contractions of labor that signal that new life is yet to come." And in the midst of that pain, be it wars or earthquakes or social unrest or COVID or violence in our streets or cancer in our bodies, in the midst of all that stands against us stands also the cross of Christ. Not a symbol of power, but one of weakness and humiliation. And the end to come, though there is pain and suffering, yes, the end to come is the new life that God gives to all who trust in that cross, to all who die with Jesus and live to the glory of God's grace. Amen.